This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 2nd of December, 2021. Very ugly day yesterday in U.S. equity markets. Let's have a look at what's going on here. And of course, I think, but my headline, I think, is one thing I want to emphasize from my point of view. I'm not so sure how much of this is something we can directly attribute to Fed Chair Powell. I think the Fed shift in emphasis on inflation is a major factor here, but nothing that was said specifically yesterday that was any worse than was said the previous day. And then I'm really reluctant in particular to invest attribution into the Omicron. I may differ from some of my colleagues on that. My opinion is I simply don't know, but of course it is a handy thing to attribute this to, and there is some uncertainty around this situation with Omicron. But Peter, what are you seeing in the markets here with this sell-off and a really ugly candlestick, not just on the S&P, but especially, you know, broadening out also to what is oddly traded as a bit of a safe haven, the NASDAQ 100, those concentrated mega caps really suffering an ugly reversal yesterday.
So the mega caps were down 1.7%, as you can see in our themes basket overview. So, which was, worse than the MSCI World, but not by much. You had bubble stocks. I think that's the key story. It's also the chart I've put in to the right side of slide two, which is the our bubbles basket. So it's down 40% from the peak, mimicking basically the move in the ARK Innovation ETF. So this is the, it's very close to the 45% drop you had in ARK Innovation Fund back in the beginning of the pandemic. So I think I see a real shift in sentiment. I see a real shift in weakness in equities. And I think breath is coming out as well on the shorting side of things. I think you can just sense a change in positioning. And regarding the Powell speech, I think that firmly puts technology stocks, at least bubble stocks, into a different period, right? So the bubble stocks have been doing extremely well with low interest rates, and now the whole thing is likely going to reverse. On the Omicron, I don't think I'm an expert either, John. I've linked to a Sky News analysis on the thing. They're just basically looking at the data, so this is not our interpretation, but you can see that the curve of new cases is significantly steeper than the Delta variant, and that's despite some pretty significant waves in South Africa, and that's increasing the probability, according to this article and the health experts' comments, that it's evading some of the immunity that people got from the previous waves. So that's the concern part that WHO, and the reason why I think Moderna CEO did the comment that he did. And then there is also data suggesting that there is an acceleration in hospitalization as well, and potentially a shift in terms of which age groups are being impacted. So a lot of uncertainty, and I think that's driving sentiment in equities, but still, we're not experts and we don't have the full picture. I was just phrasing to this article. You can go read it yourself. And then we have, I promise you that, John, because we commented yesterday on China doing this ban on foreign listings, and that's sort of being pulled back again as not factual. So it's there, but I think it's still a dynamic issue for China. But quickly before we move on, slide three. We mentioned yesterday's podcast. I said that I expected the NASDAQ 100 and Stoxx 50, that gap, which was almost 9 percentage points. Was going to be closed, and it happened a lot faster and not in the way I expected. And as you can see here, that gap is significantly lower. So this is, to me, still the one of the main traits that are being expressed on the macro level.
Yeah, it was interesting, as I said, to see that NASDAQ 100 coming off so steeply yesterday, specifically after sort of showing some signs of resilience. I just want to pull back actually to slide two, just to point out next key levels. We've sort of broken back below that prior high. That's major. But I'm looking at that 100-day moving average and then the 61.8% retracement. These are big technical focal points. As we retracement below that, you're starting to see a capitulation of that entire rally wave. And as you can see on there, 4,444 on the S&P 500 future is about where that line is. And then we've talked so much about breadth. I got a chart in from a good friend of mine talking about the classic high-low indicator. So how many stocks in the US, and this includes also ETFs and ADRs, are trading at new 52-week highs versus 52-week lows. You can see that chart on slide 4. And you know, quite interesting to notice that it was early this year, really, that the, just the sort of the broad momentum push across all equities, posting with most issues posting their 52-week highs relative to lows, was earlier this year. We saw a brief peak recently with all those amazing all-time highs, but look at the speed with which we've come off. And we're seeing 1,000 more issues posting new 52-week lows when we're still really not that far from the cycle highs. And those previous episodes were either actual bear markets or situations that bordered on bear markets, and certainly levels that were close to multi-year lows, that late 2018 meltdown on an over-hawkish Fed, of course, the pandemic in early 2020, and that early 2016 episode, which people may forget, was close to a sort of multi-year low in the equity market after a really lousy 2015 for most assets. So I think it's getting a bit worrisome. We've talked also about the unique thing this time around relative to other recent cycles, that credit is getting seeing some strain. What are you seeing, Althea, on credit? Any new developments over the last couple of days? And you're also bringing up the leveraged loans. So what's afoot there?
Well, John, we talked a lot about how it is important to create a buffer against inflation and also interest rate hikes expectations. And that implied basically to find yields, trying to eliminate duration as much as possible. And that's why in the bond market, investors have been willing to take more and more risk. They've been passing from investment grade corporates to high yield corporates, and those who can even looked at leverage loans. And that explained the massive outperformance of leverage loans these years compared to high yield corporate bonds, which is what you see in the chart on the right in slide number 5. Leverage loans provided a total return of more than 4%, while high junk bonds returned just 3% year to date. What's happening here is that as we see yields dropping on the long part of the yield curve, there is less demand in leverage loans. And that's why we have seen the leverage loan index that you see in slide number 5 dropping to August low. But the big point here, John, is that leverage loans are very important. Normally, big players are involved within leverage loans. They are quite illiquid. And in the recent years, they've been issued covenant light. It means basically without protection for the buyer. So if we see any weakness in this space, it's safe to assume there could be leakage to the corporate market overall and also stock market. So definitely right now, it doesn't signal risk, but it's something definitely that should be on our radar.
Yeah, and as you've also been pointing out, with the new hawkish turn from the Fed, the most interesting thing across the Treasury yield curve is that as we get the Fed priced to move more aggressively at the front end, you're still seeing that terminal rate, the rate that they're expected to sort of stop the hiking cycle, is very firm still at 2% for the longer term. And then this vicious flattening we're seeing in the curve, where we're seeing the very long end pinned quite low. I guess, of course, some of that is risk off and we head into safe havens. But you're pointing out on slide 6, we're getting to some remarkable levels here for the very far end of the U.S. Yield curve.
Absolutely. In slide 6, I put the 30 years U.S. Treasury yields, and yesterday they dropped to 1.75%, which is the lowest yield in 11 months. So what's happening here is that the long-term yields are pinned down by growth expectations worries, and we expect that to continue until these Omicron variant still causes volatility, and there is not enough information out there to know at what extent it will continue to cause volatility. So it's safe to assume, like from here until probably January or February, to see a bear flattening of the yield curve, because central banks are hawkish due to inflation, and that has been quite clear with the past couple of speeches from Powell, and with Omicron hovering around the economy, growth needs to be revised down. things can change once that fears surrounding Omicron is, because at that point, growth expectation can rise. And obviously, the long part of the yield curve will need to rise much faster to adapt, well, to match growth levels and also interest rate hikes expectations.
All right. And then on the Forex front, I think it feels like the market is a bit handcuffed here. So we have those Fed expectations heading higher. But again, there's no movement out on the longer end of the curve that would really, I think, stress the market, especially something like dollar yen, which would need the whole yield curve to lift, as Atiyah is mentioning, for dollar yen to get back towards that 115 area. So we're seeing the yen trading as a safe haven. We're seeing the classic currencies like Aussie not enjoying this sentiment downgrade, if you will. And that's despite a very strong resurgence in iron ore prices off the lows. So I just pulled up the chart there on slide 7, just showing that Aussie dollar has sort of, head below that pivot low from this year in the low 71s, and could even be focusing on that 70 area, which is a huge, has huge history stretching back all the way to 2015 and 16. And as well, even into the to 2018 to pre-pandemic and post-pandemic areas as well. All right, let's get over to oil markets. We need to talk oil because we have a very key event risk today, Ole, in the face of these COVID concerns and what OPEC wants to do about supply. So take us through what the oil market's looking at.
Well, the oil markets has had a horrible few days here since that Omicron virus news broke on Friday. We are down now more than 20% from the peak back in October. We've broken below the 200-day moving average, as you can see on slide 8. It's at 72.85. That's really the key. That's where we got rejected on the recovery yesterday. So the market is really looking for, once again, looking to OPEC for support. So far, the news flow from the group has been relatively low, which could indicate that there may build up for some kind of surprise. But given expectations already last month in the latest meeting that they were forecasting a balanced market in early 22, and since then we've got the SPR release, we had the renewed worries about demand, that basically calls for some kind of action today. If not actual action, then very strong verbal interaction. I believe that that the most prudent thing would be to pause the planned production hike for January, and at the same time, obviously, stand ready to do additional steps if the Omicron virus turns out to be more sinister in terms of hurting demand around the mobility around the world. Remember back in January, and that's why I just put in the small insert, that Saudi Arabia's production. Remember they made took the decision on their own, based to cut production by a million barrel just to get the market through the winter months. So we've seen before that Saudi Arabia can surprise the market. It's also happening at a time where U.S. crude oil production is back to the levels from last May, and strategic reserves continue to be pumped into the market, as you can also see on that small insert. So generally, in commodities, as it always is, when suddenly things turns around, you need to almost to hate it before you start falling in love with it again. And right now, the market is, I don't know if the market has completely fallen out of love with it just yet, whether there is more downside, but at least we're getting close to levels where I think the upside potential start to outweigh the downside. Also considering that we do have an energy crisis, and that's why I also put in slide 9 here. We do have a continued energy crisis here in Europe and very high price in Asia as well for gas. And as you can see on the slides, the stock levels of gas in Europe is now 22% below the seasonal average. It's coming down at quite an alarming rate, as you can see in the middle chart. That's basically showing the daily withdrawal from Europe, European stocks, and you can see that we're hitting near record levels right now because it's freezingly cold in Europe, and that's basically taking a lot of supplies out of storage. At a time, again, once again, focus on Russia. We're seeing no pickup in supplies. As promised back in November, we have not yet really seen a sizable pickup, and that's really leaving us in a bit of a predicament here with these gas prices not likely to come down anytime soon.
Yeah, and we should have mentioned at the top of the program, maybe we will tomorrow, and hopefully we'll have a special edition podcast or two on them. We have just released our outrageous predictions for 2022, and you've got a little teaser slide there on slide 10 because you pinned the outrageous prediction linked to oil, one I really like. So take us through just briefly what that prediction is all about.
Well, at this slide is actually made by Peter, but we talked about it this morning because it kind of ties in a bit with what one of our predictions are. That's basically that the lack of investments going into the fossil fuel industry basically drives prices to punitively high levels, which and with the renewed focus on inflation, it basically triggers a turnaround, abrupt turnaround in the investment outlook for fossil fuels. Basically, they're giving the ESG regulations are paused both for gas and oil for respectively 10 and 5 years. 10 years for gas, 5 years for oil. So some of the reality on the ground potentially could indicate that that's that even though it is obviously very outrageous because that's not the direction we want to go, but potentially where we could be forced to go are some of the recent headlines. And I'll take you through that. Take us through that, Peter.
Yeah, so the problem has been, and I think to a big surprise to us as well, that we're not seeing any significant increase in capital expenditures being announced by the major oil and gas companies. And the recent headline that have come out overnight is that Chevron is just massively increasing its share buybacks and it's holding down its spending for next year. So, I mean, if these current oil levels and the outlook we're looking into and the underinvestment, which everyone in the industry knows will be supportive of price, if that's not really enticing these oil and gas companies to do investments, I mean, we're really looking into an ugly energy picture. And that's the reason why Japan, they're not talking as much about it because we all talk about climate change and COP26, but the Japan behind closed doors are encouraging more oil and gas investments because I think they can see the sign on the wall. We need it. And I've said it before, the comments from the Norwegian prime minister not so many weeks ago, I think is perfectly showing the change in viewpoint we need in this world, that we need oil and gas to bridge the transition. There is no way that if we stop drilling, will stop the transition. It is quite simple. So this is an unfolding story, and it goes hand in hand with the energy crisis we're seeing in Europe and elsewhere.
Yeah, that's a huge story there, and it's going to be very interesting to see how this underinvestment affects energy prices going forward. I like this story you have here. Just to transition to the next slide, Peter, the Apple story, because I think this is a concrete sign that some of this demand for the holiday season has been brought forward. So take us through where your focus is on individual companies today. There's been some interesting news overnight.
Yeah, a lot of interesting news. So Apple over the past year have had troubles with supply. We all know the semiconductor constraints that have impacted many industries, including the car industry. But now Apple, and they recently cut down their iPhone production by 5%. But now they have told their suppliers, which are down between 4 and 11% in Asian session, that demand is weakening for their iPhone ahead of the holiday season. And it might be a clue, we can only guess, but it might be a clue that higher priced consumer items, car registrations are also extremely weak, as I wrote about recently. This might be a sign that these inflation numbers are beginning to really have an impact on demand. So this is, it's a clue of that change. And then I mentioned ARK Innovation ETF. You have it there on the slide 11 on the chart. So obviously in key focus today, Square. Another thing that have changed overnight, it's changing its name to Block. We know Jack Dorsey was out with this, hyperbole comment about hyperinflation, which he was ridiculed about. He stepped down from Twitter. We wrote about that the other day. And he's now focusing on Square, which is expecting to close its Afterpay acquisition in end of Q1 next year. And I think the change to Block is a recognition of Square's direction and focus going forward. I mean, his hyperinflation comments suggest to me, that's my interpretation, that Jack Dorsey doesn't believe in the fiat currency system and that it will, in his eyes, collapse with hyperinflation as the result, or maybe intertwined with that. And he's basically invested in crypto on the balance sheet, and he has rolled out via Square a lot of products in the crypto industry. So this is really something to follow here. Snowflake, explosive earnings and growth and guidance. I mean, even exceeded the most optimistic estimates. CrowdStrike as well, cybersecurity exceeding expectations, as I've said so many times in this podcast. the cybersecurity industry is on fire. It has shifted gear to a higher growth level, and CrowdStrike basically just cemented that. And then we have Elastic, which is this Dutch-based data analytics, data cloud, it's many things company. Yeah, it disappointed a little bit on the earnings release, and it traded down in extended trading. And in terms of earnings today, DocuSign is the only key thing that the growth investor will be watching. Have been hammered in the latest couple of weeks. And as you can see, there is a very much built in, this is on slide 12, you can see on the financials I've inserted that there is a very high expectation that DocuSign will move from being, you know, a $2 billion revenue company hovering around break even on the operating level to actually meaningfully generate some profit. So I think that's the key focus on DocuSign. We know revenue will be strong, but can they actually now move into a phase where they grow revenue at double digit growth rate, but also, you know, get robust and meaningful operating profits out of it?
All right, and that'll take us to the macro slide on slide 13. I should mention as well, we saw, in addition to new twists from Powell himself, he's not at all sure, for example, quote unquote, that second half inflation next year will fall, as has been expected before. And then the Cleveland Fed's Mester, Loretta Mester, she will be a voter next year, is, quote, very open, unquote, to speeding up the pace of the Fed's taper. And she quoted that as being a way to buy insurance and optionality around future policy choices. So very interesting further signals there. And then in the Fed Beige Book released last night, we're seeing plenty of mentions of pricing pressures, both on the wage side and on pricing side, passing along those prices to end users without much friction, apparently. So again, underlining the inflationary theme. Okay, today's calendar actually quite limited. I think the key thing will be the oil markets, the OPEC Plus decision there. And as we warm up tomorrow for the non-farm payrolls change, also expected that, like the ADP, to show 500,000 plus increase. Interesting, once again, to see the revisions, as we have seen strong revisions because of poor data collection. They're getting incomplete data pictures that when they do come in later, they're showing consistently showing quite large increases in the prior months upward revisions. And then we see average hourly earnings expected at 5% year on year, the highest level if we don't look at the crazy gyrations just after the pandemic outbreak. So prior to 2020, these would be the highest since the survey began in 2007. If we get that 5% versus 4.9% in October. But we'll cover more of that tomorrow, and we'll be back with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call, or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.